Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We're here giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., we archive the podcasts at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We also link to our guest's website. We'll give that to you shortly as we begin this program. Very excited. Here we are, 2018. Lots going on. A lot is happening. Some wonderful things, exciting things. For all of us, I certainly hope that your year has gotten off to a good start. I had a really nice holiday, and of course, here we are heading into the second month of 2018, if you can believe that. Time just seems to just march on faster and faster the older I get, and in spite of the fact that inside I feel 17, the body is saying, no, not so much. Today we have I think we're going to have a lot of fun. It's going to help me to sort of recollect some memories of my own from my childhood. With our guest here on the program, who's going to be talking about lessons from my grandfather, actually his grandfather. The title is Lessons from My Grandfather, Wisdom for Success in Business and Life. Mark Demetrio is my guest. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
I'm curious, first of all, usually you think about, the lessons that our fathers gave us. Why your grandfather?
Well, my grandfather was just an amazing, wonderful individual. And, you know, being blessed with him as a mentor, and the information in the book, you'll understand even so much more detail as we go through this interview. But, you know, he was an individual to me that the inspiring side of what he did in life and the inspirational side of what he did in life just always touched me. I mean, to know he left home at 16 years old to make something of himself, to be somebody, to be successful in life, you know, that alone was always very powerful to me, to leave everything behind and just, you know, leave everything you know and just take a chance. But just the person that he was as a mentor, just an unbelievable individual. You know, work hard, do the right thing in life, don't hang out with phonies, you know, don't tell people how much money you have, you know, if people are telling a story and you know the answer, let them finish. Just all, and there's so many more, and it's all, a lot of that stuff's in the book, but just really just a really great mentor, and also because the relationship we had was one of the really best friends in a way, and he always thought of me as a son he never had, and that was also very special.
Mm. And so you grew up knowing him. Not many of us actually can say that. And usually we have two sets of grandparents, one from our mother's side, one from our father's side. First of all, as far as the family tree is concerned, which side of the family did he come from?
So this is my mother's father, and all my family's mostly from Cyprus, and my mother's father, and my parents were also mentors in their own way, which we'll touch on as we go through this. But yeah, so that was the connection there.
Yeah, and my father used to comment to me because I remember, and I felt badly sharing this with him at one point, but he calmed that. He said it was okay. He understood because even my mother's. He even liked my mother's parents more than he liked his own, you know.
Oh, that's funny.
But my mother's mother and father were my favorite grandparents. Not that I disliked by any means my father's grandparents, but they didn't have the charisma, the enthusiasm so much. They were, I think, a bit older than my mother's parents, and so they were. You know, very quiet, very peaceful people, you know. And, of course, you know, kids growing up, you know, you're running around the house and you're doing all kinds of stuff. And there was not as much interaction. So I remember my grandfather on my mother's side. As I think back, some of the phrases. Now, I don't know that I could actually write a book about my grandfather because I don't think I have enough information. But some of the phrases that he used to utter when we were shipped off two at a time in the summertime to their house for 2 weeks for my parents to get a little vacation from a couple of us anyway. And I still remember whenever we would do something that my grandfather perceived as being silly or foolish or what have you, as kids often do. One of the key phrases was, "You're full of prunes." I heard that all the time. But he was also a very strong individual. In terms of your grandfather, and again, Am I correct? And I'm asking these questions because I come from a place where I want you to share with us. Our listeners can certainly go to the website, which we'll give in a moment, and also pick up a copy of the book, Lessons from My Grandfather. But I want you to share with us. Now, did he come through Ellis Island?
Yes, he came through Ellis Island, actually November 15th, 1929, a few weeks after the stock market crash.
Wow.
And to think about that, and that's, you know, just a story about itself to walk into that disaster and still make it in this world and not be, you know, I have to say, dead on a street somewhere, you know, was pretty amazing by itself. But yes, he did. And, you know, and also he retired when I was 60. He retired when he was 60, and I was actually just born. So, you know, he lived until he was 97, so I had him for 37 years of my life, which
was
just really amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, great influence for you growing up as a child and an adolescent. I'm curious, did he have those words that we often hear on the tip of his tongue as he came to the United States through Ellis Island, that this was, in spite of the date that he arrived, that this was the land of opportunity and that anything was possible?
Absolutely, 100%. He came here to make a life for himself, to have opportunity, and to get ahead in life, and he really, truly did that and lived in big fashion. So, yes, there's no question about it. And he never, you know, just the individual that he was, he never looked backwards, never, you know, if something happened, was bad or indifferent, and never really had regrets, just kind of kept forging forward, the positive attitude, you know, just it really was just unbelievably inspiring at all times. Really, truly, the way he was. And he overcame so many obstacles. And not only did he come into America with nothing and have to deal with that, he started shining shoes and then a busboy and then waiter and kept getting ahead in life, mainly because of his work ethic and his personality and being likable. You know, he ended up getting drafted into the World War II and Normandy Beach invasion at 43 years old, one of the oldest person to be drafted. He was on a ship coming into the Normandy Beach invasion. So I can go, you know, there's so many obstacles he overcame in life, but he kind of just dealt with whatever was thrown at him, just kind of dealt with it and keep forging forward.
Wow.
And I just, you know, and if more people had that type of attitude where, you know what, there's life is crazy. Life is not easy. Life is difficult. Life is disastrous at times and devastating at times. But you have to understand that that's life. You know, we're all born thinking you're going to have a nice, rosy life and everything's going to be hunky-dory and, you know, everyone's going to win first place in all your sports. It's just not like that. And people, I think, are set for disappointment at times in life. And if you understand from the beginning that it will be hard, it will be tough, life will knock you down to your knees. If you don't know how to get up and keep moving forward, it's going to keep you down. So it's all about that inspirational, just keep forging forward, keep, you know, get through obstacles, go around them or go above them or push them out of the way, but just have that, you know, forging attitude. And, you know, you want to be successful, and listen, my big tagline, success is a choice, you know, it's a choice. You want to get up early, it's a choice. You want to work late and stay through lunch, it's a choice. You want to change careers, it's a choice. You know, it's all about being successful in life and business. It's not about making a lot of money. Success is different to everybody. Do you want to be successful and, you know, be able to pay your bills and not be, to come to this rat race that we're in every day, just trying to make money and pay your bills? Then live below your means. You know that you have enough money to do what you need to do. You know, you make a lot of money and spend a lot of money. That's, you know, shame on that person that does that. If you make a lot of money, how about live below your means, put money away, and enjoy your life? So success is different for everybody. My grandfather lived a very humble life, extremely humble life. He could have traveled the world, did a lot more, had bigger houses. He always told me, this is a very powerful statement. I said, you know, Papu, which means grandfather in the Greek, I said, you know, you have so much, you've saved a lot of money. You know, you retire here at 60. You know, you got a very humble place in New Jersey, a humble place in Florida. You could be traveling the world, you know, living a bigger life. And he said, Mark, when you are without, like I was, and with on food lines and not knowing where your next dollar's coming from and, you know, scraping by meals and sharing an apartment with six guys when I first got here and having the bed one night a week, when you are without, you never want to be like that again ever in your life and never want to have that be a situation. So you never know what health bills or what's going to happen in life, but I'll never be without again. And that's the mentality of a lot of these immigrants that came to Ellis Island or made something of themselves or just got by in life. To be without is, you know, and to be worried about your next meal is a big deal, you know. So very powerful stuff there.
Now, what was it that, and I'm not sure which word I want to use here, but I'm just going to use the word forced, your grandfather to make the decision to leave his home country rather than stay there and make a life?
Interesting. So, yes, the fact of the matter is, so here's an individual that wanted to be a pharmacist because he knew in the island of Cyprus, the only one that really was making money there was pharmacist. So he did want to be a pharmacist, though. Unfortunately, my grandfather's father was a taxi cab horse and buggy guy for the island. You're talking about early 1900s. There's no cars back then.
Mm-hmm.
So, he'd be gone for weeks taxiing people around the island. He had a couple horses there, and I think it was junior year of his high school. He pulled him out of school and said, listen, I can't afford to keep you in school anymore, whatever it costs per week. I think it was like 10 cents a week or something crazy. He said, you need to be here to help your sister and brother and your mom when I'm not here, help with the horses, help with the house, and help with the family. And, he basically came to the realization saying, I don't want this life. I want to make a better life myself and have opportunity, and I'm out of here. I'm going to leave and do my thing. So the book goes into a little bit of that as well. So he ended up leaving at 16, went to Greece for 2 years, worked there for a law firm, went to London for 2 years, became a telegraph operator, found his way both places, and then saved up enough money to come here to Ellis Island and knew that this was the place to come, and opportunities were endless. So it kind of was just this forging forward, just want to be something. And it was always said, I wanted to be something in life, I wanted to make something in my life, I wanted to make money, I didn't want to struggle. So it was just that constant force forward that he had and never gave up. And I'll tell you something, what made him successful, there's all these secrets to success out there and what makes people successful and all this good stuff. It truly comes down to, like my mother always told me, it's about who you know, not what you know. You need to have your degree, you need to do well in school, but the connections in life will bring you places. If you're a likable guy and you're trustworthy and you have passion for whatever you do in life, whether it's your business or just individuality in general, social or business or whatever it is you're into. But if you're likable, trustworthy, and you're passionate about what you're doing, you really have a big leg up on most people. And that's a big separating factor of people that are successful or not.
I can attest to the fact that it is who you know and not what you know, although if you don't know your trade or what have you, the work that you want to do, it doesn't matter. No one's going to be able to help you if you don't have the skills, abilities, aptitude, etc., to make things happen. It's really very interesting, and I'm probably better able to relate your connection with your grandfather with my connection with my father. But I'm also curious about your grandfather and his obviously this whole aspect of coming to America and making it big and living out his dream and so forth. But there are a lot of people in this country, and the reason I asked the question about the land of opportunity is because there seems to be, and I'm curious if your father, your grandfather, if you ever talked with him about this particular dichotomy, or if it even existed in his own mind, between the land of opportunity, which the majority of us who were born and raised in this country have almost little awareness of. Quite honestly, I think it's something that's taken for granted. But then you have on the other side, you have an institution, for example, that depending upon who's running the big house, basically says, yeah, it's a land of opportunity. However, if you reach a certain level of opportunity, we're going to take more from you. So then it's like, well, maybe I don't want to go that high. In terms of hearing these comments about, hey, the sky's the limit. You can go as far as you want to go. But yeah, but if I go too high, somebody's going to start taking away that which I have worked so hard to achieve. And I'm curious about that particular, if that was ever an issue for you and or your grandfather in terms of if it was even a thought.
Well, no, never. I would say never a thought from him, and really not really particularly a thought from me. I mean, we just kind of forged forward. Different for him and different for me, I'll tell you in a second. So with him, he got ahead in life because of his likability and his hard work and his humor and who he was. He was a 5'2", full of life guy, smiling, happy to be around. Started as a waiter and then a busboy, then a waiter and then another waiter. And Charlie, come work here, is another job here. Charlie, come work here, is another job here. Come manage his place. Like, just kept getting ahead and kept getting ahead. In the social world, ended up managing the West Side Tennis Club, or one of the managers there, I should say, He met socialites, he met presidents, he met actors, he hung out with them. Like, he lived a life like you can't imagine. Like, this, you know, you could write a book about, and that's why I wrote a lot about him in this book. But he just lived this life that was bigger than life itself. And he, you know, he came here and did what he wanted to do, is get ahead in life and be something and be somebody. He did. It wasn't always about being, you know, ultra wealthy and living a lavish life. He lived a very, very modest life. So for him, it was about having enough to take care of his family, enjoy life with his family and friends, you know. And for me in general, I mean, I've been blessed with two wonderful parents that are great mentors, and my grandfather, again, an amazing mentor. And for me, I never really worried about money in any career I've got into myself. I just know my work ethic. I know my honorability. I know the person that I am. And I just forge forward, and I just work hard, and the money comes. So, you know, I don't really watch pennies like that per se to say, oh, you know, the government's taking more money if I make more. I just kind of keep forging forward. But if you love what you do, you know, the money comes. Yeah. I always tell people, if you're passionate about what you do and people see the passion and you're an expert at what you do and you're likable and you're trustworthy, all these factors involved in being successful, you'll be successful. It just comes.
Does it always come? Because this is, I think, maybe the misnomer for a lot of folks, and maybe between you and your grandfather and the lessons he taught you can address this. That everybody seems to think that if you love what you do, the work you do, that the money will come, and of course they're thinking, most people are thinking of the cash, okay,
right.
The dollars and cents in the bank account.
Right.
Is that always the case? That is exactly where it's going to manifest, or does it manifest in other ways that you've experienced?
Well, let me tell you. So to answer your question, when I say you work hard and all the things I mentioned, the money comes. You have to have, there's so much more involved in that. You know, I've been an entrepreneur most of my life. So when it comes to, you know, starting a business or running a business, thinking you're going to be successful, make money, there's a lot of moving parts to that. It's having the proper business plan, advertising, marketing, budgeting, finances, sales, operations, hiring the right people, being a good people person, being a good manager. So there's so many things in there. So I'm not saying it's easy, because by no means is it easy. And you know, most successful people, even some of these billionaires out there, have said they failed before many times, have been bankrupt before sometimes as well. So there's a lot of hurdles. But when you're a wise, educated risk taker, and you weigh out all the pros and cons, and you have a proper plan in place, and you execute your plan, and you know that the profit is there, or the income could come in from what you're doing, then potentially you could be successful, and maybe very successful. So very loaded couple statements there, because, you know, it's a misnomer thinking you just work hard and be successful. It's not the case, because if you're a great salesperson selling widgets that make a penny a widget, and you're the best salesman in the world, and you're making a penny a widget, and you're only make up whatever number per year you're making, you're in the wrong business. You should be selling something that has a bigger profit if you're that good of a salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
So you see what I'm saying here? There's a lot that goes into it. Now, for that, you know, question you asked or statement you made, secondarily, as far as the money, now, success and money are two different things. Success, as I mentioned before, is having a successful life, being loved by your family and friends, being a good person, doing good child work, being involved in boards and being on into boards if possible to give back, helping others if you can, whether it's to help them find a job, help with your connections, help with referrals, just be a good neighbor, help people that have in need if they have an opportunity where you can get involved in something. So there's a lot of things that have to do with success in life. So it's different for everybody. Some people are just all about making money and forgetting about everything else. Running or being successful in life is all these pieces. So there's a big difference. But obviously, you want to be able to make money. And I say it's not to have happiness. People are very confused about that. I need money to be happy. That's not the case. You want to make money to have the freedoms in life and beat the rat race, as I'm saying, to be able to have a comfortable life and have an enjoyable life. So when you have enough money to pay your bills, know you have money for your kids' college or kids' weddings, and you have some money put away for retirement, you know you can live comfortably and enjoy your life. And again, it's up to you how much you want to spend per year or not. So if you know you're making a lot of money or making not a lot of money, but you can live below your means, you'll always be ahead of the game.
Let me ask you about the influences, those outside forces that may or may not have made your grandfather successful, that may or may not have made you successful. Who is the one person who made it happen? Or was it an outside force? Because a lot of people are very resentful. I worked for a radio station in Phoenix in the 80s, and I was hiring people. And I would show them, I'd go down the list of I'd do the job description, and I'd say, here's the duty, here are the duties, and this is what we're going to pay you. And they would say, okay. And then once they started doing the job, and I'd say, hey, by the way, you didn't do, this needs to be done over here. I'd say, well, you guys don't pay me enough to do that. I'd say, excuse me, that was part of the job description. And then, a great case point, back at that time, the news service that we were using ran a story about Motorola, who was laying off 1,000 people. And the reason they were laying off 1,000 people was because they had done an internal audit and found that nearly $1 million worth of materials had disappeared from the factory. And the only way that would have happened is if the employees had taken them, i.e. they felt that, hey, we're not getting paid enough, so we'll just take materials from the company. There's this kind of resentment towards corporations right now in this country, towards whoever's at the top and supposedly who's making the big bonuses and what have you. And yet it is, this is just a guess on my part, that it's those people who are working, doing the actual hands-on labor that are actually making these guys at the top the millions and millions of dollars. But it's the people down at the bottom who are, like I say, they have that resentment. How did your grandfather address that, if it was a conversation, or how do you address that based upon what your grandfather taught you in terms of teaching people that it's not up to the CEO at the top or people that are coming down the line or even your supervisor? It's up to you.
Very well said and very well spoken, and I will tell you that is the driving force behind my life, because everything we do in life is up to us. As I said before, success is a choice, and everything's a choice. So when it came down to, and I say this a lot too when I even speak or in my book sometimes, I mention some of this stuff as well, you take 100 people that are starting a job on day one, 100 people. Whoever's coming in early, working through lunch, staying late, helping other people, being a go-getter, having a great personality, doing a great job at work, who gets ahead in life? Who gets the promotion? Who gets the next promotion? Who likes to be critiqued? Who likes criticism? Make me a better person. Make me a better employee. Make me the best I can be. Supervisor, how can I get that next promotion? What do I need to do to get the next level? How do I get that better raise? What am I doing wrong? What am I doing right? This is all the things that you need to do to be successful. People miss the boat. There's an entitlement attitude in life, which is ridiculous. Nothing's handed to you. Even in my point in my life, I can tell you dozens of stories that I've went out of my way to make things happen. Dozens. And most successful people tell you the same thing. You have to make things happen. They're not going to happen for you. You don't have luck in life. You can have luck in general with things or be lucky, but nothing just comes easy. You have to work at everything. You have to have plan of action. You have to have a plan of action. You have to work the plan, but you have to make things happen. You have to make things happen. So, and people in general, if they have the attitude where, well, I deserve a promotion, I deserve more money, well, I'm not making enough, and I'm working my 9-to-5, and why aren't I making as much money as the next person? And why, you know, why aren't I living a great life? You know, why can't I lose weight? Why can't I be better, in better shape? Why can't I have all the riches of the world? Well, guess what? People are saying, why? What are they doing about it? What are they doing about it? I'd work 3 jobs if I had to survive, or 3 jobs if I had to get ahead in life. Or, again, it comes down to, where do you want to be in life? You know, I tell students when I speak at high schools, people in the audience, so I talk to kids in general, you know, they want to start in football and they're not starting, they don't know why. Well, there's your answer. You just said you don't know why. Talk to the coach. Ask the coach, why aren't I starting? Why is the person ahead of me starting? What can I do to improve myself? Well, you're not fast enough, you're not strong enough, and he's been doing it a little longer, and he's got more experience. Okay, so if that kid really wants to get ahead next year, you better go work out hard, start training every day and night for speed, and potentially get a coach, a personalized coach. So I can go on and on with stories, but that's in everything in life. You want to get ahead in your career, same thing, ask your manager, what do I need to do to get the next promotion, or what am I doing that's not right or wrong? I mean, these reviews are important. So I kind of went on a tangent a little bit. You see my message here? It's up to the individual. You know, there's a big entitlement attitude. Even with these kids today, you know, when they have all these competitions and they all get down to 12th place merit awards or ribbons, you know, as opposed to just first, second, and third place and you're done. They're so scared to disappoint these kids. The problem is they're setting them up for failure to some degree. because they're not going to be able to be in the real life to know there's disappointment everywhere. You're not going to get ahead all the time, and you're going to be let down. You're going to get cut from the team, and you may not get the grades you thought you were going to get. So, you know, my whole realization is this book, I put this book in a lot of kids' hands and in a lot of people's hands as it comes out the 18th. I hope that many, many, many people will read it and continue on reading it and passing it on, because there's deep messages in here about a lot of this stuff and what it takes to truly be successful and have a successful life.
And of course, you alluded to the definition of success. It is not necessarily a lot of zeros in front of the decimal point in your bank account, or big house or cars, or and the list goes on. One of the other aspects too that I'm curious about as well, and I bring this up rather regularly on this program because I actually take a little humor in this. It actually makes me chuckle. In the Declaration of Independence, it talks about how we have these inalienable rights. And among them, these aren't the only ones, but among them are life and liberty. We get those, okay? Those are a given, according to this document.
Right.
However, it's the third one of the many. It's the third one that's listed that I find so fascinating because of the way that it's phrased. The pursuit of happiness. Not happiness, but the pursuit of happiness. Talk about that a little bit as far as you and your grandfather and your successes, both his and yours, and where you are today.
I love that statement. It's a powerful, powerful statement, and I love it because the pursuit of happiness is different for everybody, you know, and the social side of this world and this country, let's just say, for example, you see the Rolex commercials and the big houses and the big TVs and the big cars and you know, all that great stuff, and that's great. But you know what? The sacrifices and hard work and hours and sweat and tears and money spent and effort spent to get to that successful level, boy, can I tell you, it takes a lot. And people don't realize that. They're not willing to sacrifice or put in the time and effort it takes. They want the shortcuts. But I'll tell you right now, you know, here I am 48 going on 49. The amount of hours I've spent in my life and bettering myself in every way, shape, and form as an individual, as a business person, as a family person, you know, just there's just so much that goes into it. So you think about the pursuit of happiness, and that's different for everybody. You know, if you take 100 people, like, you know, some answers may be the same, but what's your pursuit for happiness? What do you want in life? What's going to make you happy? And that should be different for everybody. Everyone may want to have, you know, I want a family with a white picket fence and a couple kids and a dog. And a, you know, it's different for everybody. But the pursuit of happiness, you know, for my grandfather particularly, was to get ahead in life and be something and make something of himself. That was purely his statements to me. It was never about being wealthy. It was never about, you know, retiring a millionaire like he did. It was never about having all the lavish stuff. It was about having the life he wanted to have and get ahead and be something. And he did that, you know. And for me, I've never used the words how much money I want to make or how much money I want to have in the bank or how much money I'm going to make. I just know that whatever I've done in life, I do it with passion, whether it was shoveling driveways, you know, in this, when I was a youngster, mm-hmm. because I had a paper route and I thought about it early on in life. Well, I have a paper route now at 11. Maybe I should shovel these same people on my route's driveway in this winter, and in the summer I'll mow their lawn. Now I have a dedicated team here of people that are going to let me do work for them. So I did it, and I did it with zest. I made sure the driveway was clean as ever, every corner was shoveled, and I was happy as can be. So that's just my work ethic. But, you know, kind of went on a tangent there for a second, but the bottom line is pursuit of happiness is different for everybody. You know, yeah. What do you want out of life? Because life is life, and it's, you know, you don't even know how long you'll have from when you're born until when you die, but what do you want out of life? It's a powerful statement, you know, and it's different for everybody.
Well, you and I share a nice history because I was a paper boy as well in eighth grade and then all through high school, all 4 years. I have to tell you that even at the age of 57, if there were a job that I could go back to, if it still existed the way that it was when I was in high school, that would be the job I would love to go back to. Because number one, for the most part, you got to choose your own hours, obviously with the exception that if it was the morning paper, you had to deliver it in the morning by a certain time.
Paper. I was up 6 a.m. every morning.
Same here. I did that, especially Sunday mornings.
Yeah.
I loved bicycling around, and I delivered apartment complexes, so it was really kind of nice.
Yeah.
You got to meet all kinds of neat people. I just loved that.
Yeah, it's a great job.
And you're out in the open, out in the air, you know, just for me, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
And as far as sales is concerned, I worked when I came to Santa Barbara a little over 12 years ago. I went to work for a company that sold these $29.95 packages that would help you to buy a car or buy a house. And I have to tell you that, first of all, I hated the job. It was just, it was incoming calls, so it was no cold calling, but I hated the job because I really didn't believe in the product that I was selling, because I thought, there are other ways that people can buy a car or a house than paying us $29.95. And yet, the best description that I can give you is a phrase my father said to me. He says, "Hey, I know you'll do just fine, Richard. You could sell ice cubes to Eskimos."
Yeah, right. That's a famous line, yeah.
And I did so well at that job. They had this little fishbowl, this one room that was all glass surrounded, and it was raised up two steps. And if you got your sales up to a certain level, you got to go into that room, and you did your work in there. And then they would bring you lunch every day for that week. And as long as you kept your sales up to that level, you got to stay in that room. And at the end of my tenure there, which was about 9 or 10 months, I was in that room for, I think, the last 2 or 3 weeks. And the irony was, I was good at it, yet I hated it. Oh, it was just awful. And I kept telling myself, I hate sales. I do not want to do sales. And yet every time I turn around, in spite of the fact that I'm in broadcasting, I do these interviews, I talk with people, I produce, I do all these different things, the one thing I have not been able to get across, I haven't been able to cross that line to mentally accept that it doesn't matter what you are doing, you are always selling something.
Everything sales.
Yeah, everything.
Even being a doctor. Even a doctor, a dentist, chiropractor, everyone's selling. You're selling yourself in life.
Exactly.
Everything you do, business and life. It's all sales. It's all communicating. It's all coming across to someone that you're sincere. You're a man or woman of integrity. You're likable. You're trustworthy. You know, these are all the common, and it's a good segue into this, because the common threads to successful people, you know, and my mother always told me, you know, you could be anything you want. Like, cause I tell you, I had three different mentors. My grandfather was an unbelievable mentor. My dad was a man of integrity, a family man, always told me you want to have your own business so you can spend time with your family and never miss their events and never miss their sporting things. My mother was always one of, you could be anything you want in life. You know, you're going to get ahead. You could be the president of the United States, you know, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. My brother and I are both Eagle Scouts from youth. My dad pushed us through that. So between, you know, the Eagle Scout and having the paper out as early as 11 and have a responsibility, you know, you just learn these things. You learn to be successful and be on the right path. But, you know, people in general, they're kind of lost in the shuffle as far as, you know, what to do, how to be successful, and how to make it work for themselves. And I think they need to find what makes them happy. You know, when you talk about sales before, and it's funny, you know, your strengths and weaknesses, you know, what careers you like, you know, it's very important to have passion for whatever you're doing, you know, because the career you're in, you know, people need to see you're passionate. If they see you're passionate and they see you're an expert, it's addicting. You know, they want to be with you, they want to hang around with you, and they want to do business with you. So, you know, for just like you said, you might have been great at sales and not realized that you were great and never really truly loved it or embraced it. You just thought you were selling. You didn't want to be like a salesman or, you know, whatever that mentality may be, or salesperson. But there's glory in everything. There's a glory in what you're doing, and it's sales still. So everything's sales. That's a good point. Yeah.
And, of course, when I was a paper boy, I used to win all kinds of awards. I went to Disneyland a number of times because I was a top salesperson. And all those great – I mean, it was fantastic. And but that was something I loved doing. It wasn't so much that I loved the paper. I mean, I didn't even read it. I just delivered it and collected the money and so on and so forth.
Right.
But it was all of that ancillary stuff that went along with it was so fabulous. I want to let our listeners know before we go to a break here, grandfatherlessons.com, the website we want you to go to check out more lessons from my grandfather, wisdom for success in business and life. Mark Demetrio is my guest here on the program. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And I'm going to tell you what, we're going to be right back.
Tell me your stories.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. And again, I thank you for staying with us along with Mark Demetrio and talking to us about the lessons from his grandfather. Exciting stuff. I have to tell you, because it is those folks who have gone on before us who have hopefully learned an awful lot, to the extent that they then pass that on to us, although there are generations that they would rather make their own mistakes. And I'm sure that, Mark, that you probably had those moments as well, in spite of the fact that your grandfather, you know, he wanted to help you to avoid the mistakes that he made. I'm just curious about that. Is that a fair assessment that he wanted you to avoid that, or did he say, hey, you know what, you're going to make mistakes and I'm going to let you make them, but I'll be here, you know, to support you and encourage you on and so forth to learn through them?
I tell you, you know, it's funny because he would never say things that way like that, but he would always tell me things in general. Because he did, you know, he made mistakes. You know, he bought some land that unfortunately went, you know, was by the ocean and ended up going underwater, so he stopped paying taxes on it. He was invested in a little bit of a movie. You know, he did different things. So he told me about these failures as well. But he would say, as opposed to never do anything, because, you know, you got to take chance in life. You got to be a risk taker in general. And most entrepreneurs take risks, but you got to take calculated risks. But what he would say is, very powerful statements in different ways. What he would say is, don't tell people how much money you have, because the reason he would say that is because they're going to come after you for money, either to borrow it or to want you to invest in things. So don't tell people how much money you have. Don't trust, ready for this one? Don't trust anybody, even yourself. So that's what he meant by that, was have other advisors to help guide you with things, because you can't even trust your own judgment sometimes. Never hang out with phonies. You want to hang out with people that are real. He didn't like phonies at all, people that were show-offs, people that show they have too much money, because he was a real guy. He didn't like to hang out phonies. So these are all very powerful things in itself. So he told me about the stock market early on when I was in high school, because that's when he was very big. He learned a lot from all the people he was around his whole life. He was self-taught, but the stock market was a big deal for him, and he learned a lot from people that were around him that taught him a lot about it and gave him advice and guidance on that. That was one big area. But I would never say, he never said to me, you know, don't take chances, you know, be careful what you do, you know, never of that sort, you know what I'm saying? Because he was just more of just powerful statements he would make behind the scenes.
Hmm. Well, I know that there's a great quote, or at least I guess it's more of a statistic than a quote. It is said that, I think it was Thomas Edison was asked, how many times he failed before he got the light bulb to work. And he said, oh, I never failed. I just found 990 ways that it didn't work.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
And it is interesting. And again, here we are in the 21st century. Now, a lot of us, myself included, growing up with the Jetsons, thought we'd be technologically a lot further along than we are, flying cars and so forth. And I know they're coming. I know they're coming. People are actually working on them. I'm not sure how safe that's going to be. But nonetheless, I'm curious as to comparisons that if you have made comparisons with not only where you are today in terms of how you've gotten here, obviously from the lessons from your grandfather, but even from your grandfather's time, how have things changed or even stayed the same, i.e. all the rules have changed because we're in a whole different strata because we're in the 21st century, or that the rules never change? They might change verbiage, but the rules are all the same. It doesn't matter what century you're in.
I love that you asked me that question, because I'm going to tell you something very profound. If my grandfather was here today, as a young individual aspiring to get ahead in life, the same person that he is, you plop him in this world today, he would still succeed in probably a bigger fashion. Because it really comes down to, again, the core factors, and I call this the secret to success in a way. Because he was likable, he was trustworthy, he was hardworking, he was a good soul, he was a good person. He was a good family guy. So he knew, you know, as far as what it takes to be someone that's successful and be driving forward, but he had the drive and he had the passion and he had the energy to forge forward and never look back. So you take an individual like that that's powerful in its own way, right? And you take that and plop him in here with all the technology around us and the internet and the cell phones and the computers and everything you got going on, the iPads. So how much more readily available we have to us to be successful and help us be successful, help us have everything at the touch of a dime right in front of us. But it comes down to the core principles as an individual. Now, obviously, depending on the business you're going to be in, there's some businesses are you sit behind a desk all day, you're on the computer, and that's different. But if you're in a people business, if you're in a people business, it's mostly all sales. And what he did, he ran clubs and ran restaurants and that whole world and country clubs. But basically, you take that individual, put him in the same country clubs, restaurant facilities today, he would be just as successful. And because people would be like a magnet. People are addicted to that positivity, that passion, that energy, that likability. So, and I just know that as a fact. I mean, there's something that is very exciting about that. So, you know, that would be my answer to your question.
What about this aspect that exists primarily in sales, how do I want to put this? One of the lessons I learned early on in this business, in broadcasting, I learned from one of my general managers who found out that one of the other stations in the market was, i.e., stealing our clients. They would go in and they would say things about us and what we were or weren't doing, and the client would go over there. And I remember talking to him about this, and he said, well, I'm going to go and I'm going to talk to that client, and I'm not going to go in there and I'm not going to say a bunch of other stuff to try to convince them to come back. What I'm going to do is I'm going to ask them to take out another sales package with us, advertising package with us, and let's see which station brings in the revenue for them, and then go with that station. If it's not us, then it's not us. But he said, I will never go in and badmouth our competition. And what I find both in marketing and in sales and in whatever, you know, retail, and even in politics, this is what really bothers me about the politics, is that if your product or service is not of a quality that people are going to buy it, and you have to resort to tearing down your competition, I won't buy your product or service because you cannot tell me why I should buy yours. You're only telling me why I shouldn't buy your competitors. Talk to me a little bit about that mentality in the workplace and, well, in life in general, because that seems to be the case. We're always, you know, in order to build ourselves up or build our family up or build our whatever it is, we have to tear somebody else down.
Yeah, I actually, that's great that you're saying that, because I always, whenever I train salespeople, and I've trained hundreds of people over my careers, I've always, always told them, you talk positively about what you do, and you never talk down about the competition because people don't like that. And, you know, it's a very powerful statement you're making again because, you know, even in my own life, you know, whatever, I'm in the mortgage business, so there's always other people, you know, competing with me wherever I go, and obviously in different venues, different associations, you know. And basically, if you just take pride in what you do, take passion in what you do, talk positively about what you do, come across as an expert, the competition will weed itself out. And that's the way you have to approach things. So there's no need. Now, if you know you're less expensive than the competition, you can absolutely mention that. But to berate or to talk negatively or talk poorly about them, it doesn't really go a long way. You know, I mean, you could talk about facts, per se. If you're less expensive, you offer more services, you've been doing it longer, that's all okay, positive stuff, but never mm-hmm. never negative. Never negative statements. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, and then there's the other aspect too. When I first started doing this, when I first started getting into this business and I was doing projects for people, and maybe we can talk a little bit, because this sort of ties back into what we were talking about earlier in terms of success and do what you love to do and the money will follow. I worked for a religious radio station in Phoenix, and many of the ministers, pastors, and laity would come to me who were producing programs. They would come and do their shows. And they would want to produce, at that time, a cassette that they could duplicate and give, you know, sell to people or give to people. And they asked me what I would charge. And I said, well, you know, and I would give them a rate, you know, that was, I thought, fairly reasonable. And so we would do the project. And then when I would share that rate, maybe this goes to what you were talking about earlier, about what your grandfather said, don't tell people, you know, how much you make. When I would share this, like, maybe with a family member or a friend, they say, well, but... You're undercutting yourself. You should be charging more than that. To which I would respond, if I charge what you think I ought to charge, and I know that they can't afford it, then I don't get to do the work. I don't get the experience. But if I charge what I am charging them and they're willing to pay it, then they get the product that they're wanting to distribute. I'm assisting them in that process, and I'm making a little, plus I get the experience and so forth. And for the longest time, that was how I did things. And I got the little jobs here and there, and I got to help these folks out. I didn't necessarily agree or disagree with the message that they were putting out. That wasn't the point. It was just like with this program. I want the listener to make up their own mind. It's not my job. If people agree with you, Mark, hey, fantastic. If they disagree with you, and there will be some who will, you know it as well as I do, that's fine too. Because you can't please all of the people, right?
Absolutely correct. But I will tell you something to further your statement. You know, criticism in life, I've always been one to love criticism, whether it's about me as an individual, me about a profession as a professional, or any facet in life. Because criticism, if it's constructive criticism, can make you a better person. I would always be open to hearing from anybody if I'm going to be a better speaker, a better worker, a better parent, a better friend, whatever it may be, better colleague. If it improves me as an individual, my goal in life is to continue to be the best I could be at everything I do. And I don't mean it in an obnoxious way, but just be the best I can be. So for that matter, I don't think I'm the best at everything. I don't think there's no one better than me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not that holy to think that, but I want to continue to improve on who I am, continue to improve as an individual, as a business person, whatever it may be. So taking criticism from any source is possible to improve who I am is wonderful. So if you keep your mind open to that, you go a long way, because most people are too insecure or too upset about it. Mm-hmm. And also comes down to peer pressure. And I talk about that in high schools, a lot of peer pressure. I never succumbed to peer pressure. I never did ever in my entire life, even as a high school student. That's a whole other facet, to be positive, confident about who you are, and you don't need to succumb to peer pressure. And that's, you know, part of the whole segue into life as individuals and young people. But, yeah, so I would just say that the criticisms of life make you to be the best person you can be. And everyone should be continuing to improve themselves, whether it's reading or watching programs or listening to, you know, videos or whatever it may be. So I'm going to follow your statements by saying that criticism is good if it's used constructively.
Yeah.
And you should also reach out, like I said earlier, and I'm really serious about that. Whether it's your boss or your coach or even your parents or your priest at church, whatever it may be, if you want to continue to improve yourself, the people that are managing, watching, overseeing, or coaching you, those people are the ones that tell you how you can be better. Where's my weaknesses? How can I get an A in class? How can I be a starter in football? How can I be number one in the business in the sales team? Like, you know, people don't go out of the way to ask these things. They just don't go out of the way. There's roadmaps everywhere. There's business plans everywhere laid out in front of them. I'll tell you another funny side thing. So in my book, I talk about this to some degree as well, but I'll tell you just in life in general. So, if people, and I talk about on stage in general, when people are looking to be a lawyer, let's say, and I want to be a lawyer, I want to be the best lawyer ever. Great. They come out of school, they go to law school, they come out, they work somewhere, they start their program, they figure it out as they go along, right? Maybe they're lucky to have a manager or mentor. How about any career you want to get into before you even graduate college, how about you interview five of the most successful people in that field that you even know or can get your hands on, through family, friends, your teacher, whoever it is. Find five of the most successful lawyers you can get your hands on. You ask them, you ask through your contact, if they can reach out to them and say, would you mind if my so-and-so, my nephew, my friend, my son comes in and interviews you for half an hour, he wants to go into law and wants to learn more about what you're doing, they're going to always say yes. I guarantee you they'll find time for you.
Mm-hmm.
You sit down, you ask that person the same 10 questions as you're going to ask the other four people. How'd you get started? Where was your big break? Where was your failures? Why are you so successful? What are you doing different than other people? What can you tell me to make me be successful? You know, just all these questions. You can come up with them yourself for every industry. You ask the same 10 questions, and now you have a roadmap to success. How could you fail if you hear from the five most successful lawyers that you know about where their success came from and what they did differently? How can you fail? And people don't do things like that. It's just little simple things, and I call things, success made simple is a big tagline of mine as well. Things were all right around us, people try to recreate the wheel, and it's all recreated for you.
You know, I remember back in Phoenix, where I was born and raised, there was a news talk station, the number one station for several decades. And when I got into radio in the late 1979, I should say, I used to think about working for that station. Oh, man, I've got to put a lot of years in before I'll ever get close to that place. And it was actually in the mid-'80s, and I was working with some people, and they suggested that I write down a statement and write it over and over and over again on one piece of paper and then put it in a frame or whatever, you know, hang on to it, sort of an affirmation kind of thing. And so I wrote down, I am working at KTAR AM, 620 AM radio, et cetera, et cetera. I still have that sheet of paper, and it was not too long after that that I got the job. It was overnight weekends, but it was at that station. I could say that I worked with these people that I grew up as a kid listening to on the radio. I actually had the privilege of producing from the Phoenix end, from the affiliate end, the Larry King Show from Mutual Broadcasting. And I even talked to people about how at that time I was going to the Larry King School of Broadcasting. I was learning everything I could from him, how he did interviews and the process he went through. And, of course, I loved the baseball stories and on and on. But it's one of those things where I hadn't thought about it until I found myself in the arena of broadcasting about doing those kinds of things. And that's part of what this show is about giving people choices and knowledge of those choices. We don't even know what choices we have available. And this leads me into a great subject I want to talk about, and that's education. How important, you've alluded to it throughout so far, but how important directly is not only a formal education, but even after you get out of the primary, secondary, post-secondary, graduate, whatever level you want, is education in this process of success and the lessons that your grandfather taught you?
So I would tell you, so depending on the field that you're in, you should be continuing to fuel your brain with knowledge, whether it's reading books or trade magazines or going to extra classes or going to get certifications. You know, you want to be an expert in your fields. Being an expert in your fields, you need to either A, have the accolades or accreditations that go with that, whether there's certificates or licenses or things you can get in your field to separate you from the pack, number one. Number two, to stay up with industry news, to constantly be reading, whether it's online or a magazine or wherever it may be coming in, whatever source is going to come to you, to stay up with the most current information. And the last piece is just to continue to further your business skills in whatever field you're in. You know, whether it means that you need to learn how to be a speaker, whether it means you need to be a presenter, or anything of that area, to better yourself as an individual, or just to be, you know, more advanced in whatever your specialty is. So to be educating through life, I'll tell you, I mean, for me too, I've been educating myself continuously through life and all the different things I've done. So, and that just comes with when I said earlier that one of the things, life, being likable, trustworthy, being impassioned, being an expert in your field, you can't be an expert in your field if you're not staying up on all the information I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very important piece to the puzzle, without question.
But at the same time, there is so much out there that it can be overwhelming. So how do you overcome that deluge, that tsunami of information?
Well, yeah, you have to pick and choose what's the most important things to you. You can't read everything. You have to pick and choose which are the most powerful things to read. Now, again, that's something, you know, luckily with the web, you can go online and say, what's the, you know, five best publications to read for my field? I mean, mm-hmm. type in that, it's going to come up and say, here's the five recommended things to read. But, yeah, I would definitely, you know, listen, people are, and that's a whole other world, the internet. People are so overloaded with social media, with emails, getting email blasts and information and news and trade journals and magazines. Yeah, there's no question about being overloaded. Listen, time is one thing we can't change. We have 24 hours in a day, and how you use every second of the day is up to you. Every day you can decide what you want to do. You can change your life. You can change your patterns. You can change your careers. You can change anything. You can change your spouse if you're really not happy there, too. You can do whatever you want to do.
That's true.
You know? Right. So, so things in life, you know, it's up to you, and time is very precious. I value my time, and I respect people's time tremendously. I'm very respectful with time, and because I know that's something we all don't have, and we're all very busy. So when it comes to what you're going to do with that time, you got to put aside time to make sure either you're going to read or you go, if you go online, to stay up on things. So that's, it just comes down to, again, the amount of time you have. But when it comes down to the simple things like, you know, what certifications you can get or licenses you can get in your field to separate you from the pack, you know, having initials after your name, that's powerful. It's very powerful to take the extra step to get those things done, to separate you from your industry, from your competitors, or as an individual, separate you from the pack.
You know, one of the saddest set of four words that I heard uttered in 2017 were attributed to the final words of a gentleman who I followed as a kid on TV. And when he passed away, his sister, I believe it was, released his final utterance, as it were. And it was, so much wasted time. And I thought, David, this was David Cassidy, you accomplished so much at such an early age. Maybe, I don't know, good or bad or indifferent. How could you possibly think that it was wasted, you know? But, hey, everybody's perspective is different, certainly. But I just, I when I heard that, I thought, wow. You know, here's a guy who, you know, obviously had his struggles, and we all do. And some of us end up succumbing to those struggles, unfortunately. But I think that some folks who are really trying to succeed, they do feel not just overwhelmed by the amount of information that's out there, the opportunities. I'm sure you've been to restaurants where when they hand you the menu, it's almost the size of War and Peace. There are so many pages and so many choices, you just don't know what to order.
Right.
You know? And I've watched a lot of those restaurant shows where they're trying to remake them, and the guy comes in and says, we're paring this menu down to one sheet, okay? You have too many items. You can't make all this stuff. But at the same time, we talk about choices and knowledge of those choices here on this program, and it is important that we educate ourselves, that we get ourselves informed about what's going on out there, and that's the reason why we have folks such as yourself on the program. Mark Demetrio, author of Lessons from My Father, Wisdom for Success in Life and in Business and Life. The website is grandfatherlessons.com, grandfatherlessons.com. We, of course, will be linked. Now, some interesting, first of all, let me ask you, God, I've got so many questions I want to ask you, and we're running out of time here. Let me ask you about the role of your faith in all of this, both as you were growing up, knowing your grandfather and the mentor that he was to you, and now today, having passed on, and now you are sort of, and you've got a, I would think you're probably loving this, having the opportunity every time you have a chance to talk, reliving those wonderful memories of your grandfather. What about the faith that you had and or that you and your grandfather shared and its influence in this process?
Well, yeah, it is a blessing to have written this book about him. He was, again, so close with me and me with him. And so it is a blessing to share him with the world. It's great. And that's why I wrote it, to share the goodness of who he was with the world, to have them have a mentor like I had and to share, you know, with my insights and, as well as him, on success and business and life and everything that goes with it. But I will tell you, he was a man of faith. He believed that literally, he really believed this, that he had an angel on his shoulder overlooking him through life, because he was so many times in his life and so many obstacles he overcome that he truly believed he was blessed. He really did. He told me that many times. And I believe that no matter what your religion is or whatever you believe in, having faith, and I'll leave that, that's the powerful part of this. So leave all the churches out of this or your synagogues or anything you believe in and what you follow, whatever God you follow or not. But the faith, to have faith in yourself, to have faith and belief in just the power itself, is that's the powerful side to things. And to just have the urge to believe in yourself and believe things can happen, believe you can make things happen, and believe in goodness. So there's a faith part to that that I believe in. So no matter how many times you go to worship or where you worship, it's more about the power of faith and believing in yourself and believing in dreams and believing in hope. You know, you have to have all that positivity around you and get rid of fear and get rid of negative thoughts and get rid of, you know, regrets, because that's overwhelming and it's consuming and it's negative. So all that stuff, get out of your head. Don't look backwards. You'll learn from the past. So there's a lot of this that play in together, the faith with the hope, with the dreams, with the passion and driving forward. So it's very reassuring to the individual if you believe in yourself and you have the faith to know things will turn out the way they should. But there's a lot of work that goes behind that. So it's a very long-winded answer to you, but hopefully you get the message that it's just really more of the faith in itself. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, I just feel that, you know, when you're a good person and you do the right thing and you're loved by your friends and family and you're an honorable person, you know, you almost like have that aura of faith just constantly with you and hopes and dreams and passion, just because it's all goodness. You know, it's all goodness. If more people were just good in and out, they would realize that better things happen to them all throughout life.
Some of the other lessons are listed here. We don't have enough time on this program. Love to have you back to talk more about this. Remain humble always. And I have to tell you that gets, strangely enough, gets a little easier as time goes on, because what I have found is that when I start getting too big for my britches, universe has just the loveliest way of giving me my comeuppance and right. reminding me that, yeah, you're good at what you do, but don't get too full of yourself, because there's right. always someone in front of you and you didn't get here by yourself.
Right, right. And I mentioned that earlier too. And it's funny, there yeah. are 15 principles, and that's one of, there's many of them that you have in front of you, but without, you know, regurgitating all of them, but there's a lot of great old mm-hmm. little bullets, and then I go into a lot of it in the book. But yeah, that's one of the things he always said to me, and this is one of the powerful statements too. He goes, if someone's telling you something or teaching you something or telling you a story and you know the answer, let them finish. You don't need to tell them, oh, I know that already. Oh, I already understand that. Just let them finish. Let mm-hmm. them play. Maybe you'll pick up something that you didn't know. Maybe you'll pick up one little thing. And he always told me, too, and it's another quote of his, you can learn from everybody. You can learn from everybody and anywhere, on the streets, little kids, anywhere, restaurant, anywhere you are. You can learn from everybody. It was another powerful statement he made in one of the quotes in my book from him. You can learn from everybody. So he was all about that. You learn, you know, some of the things. Look for what others don't see. Be awake and alive to the suffering of others. You know, to work, and here's another, to work is to survive, and that's not enough. You know, that's you know, to work is to work. But do you want to enjoy life? You want to get enough out of life? You want to, you know, you have to enjoy what you do, because to go on that tangent, if you're in a career or a job that you don't like, and most people are, it's like being in jail.
Yeah.
I have to say, it's difficult to change, but if you're on this earth for one time, and if there's any listeners that can change their lives, and I make an impact on somebody, and I'm blessed to have written a book that I know will change people's lives, to know that you're on this earth one time. You know, whatever happens after this and your beliefs, that's a different story. But what you want to do with your life and make the best out of it and be happy every day, there's sacrifice and there's change and commitment. There's no question about it. You got to go backwards before you go forward sometimes. You got to go back 4 steps before you go forward 3 and then maybe 10.
Mm-hmm.
It's all sacrifice. But what you do with your 24 hours, what you want in life, is up to you. If you want happiness, you don't have it now, then you got to reach to get it. You know, if you need help, then get help, you know.
An observation on my part, 2008, when we started having this, what I don't know whether you call it a mini depression or a recession or
disaster.
Okay, we'll call it a disaster.
I was in the mortgage business. I saw it happen all around me. It was a financial disaster.
Hundreds of thousands of people lost their jobs. And interestingly enough, the first thought that came to my mind was, I wonder how many of those people hated their jobs. And the reason came to mind was because I thought, and now here's an opportunity, once they get through the grieving of losing their job, maybe they might consider pursuing something that they would really rather do, rather than maybe they were doing a job that their father before them and so forth, it was passed down. This is just what our family does. I want to do something different. And this gave them the opportunity to do that. And I understand that there were a lot of entrepreneurs that were born out of that. I don't know how many have succeeded in the last 10 years, but in a sense, what an opportunity.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because it comes back down to this, and it goes back to high school and college even as well. If you do what you love, from the beginning. Forget about the money, because money will come. You know, you don't look at a career for all that makes the most money, or that one works the least hours, or that one has fame and fortune, whatever it is. If you find out what you love, and you know they talk about what your why is in life or what your passion is in life, I mean, that's hard for younger kids to know sometimes, but you can drill down. What do you love to do? What do you love to be around people? You love to be around computers? You love to be around animals? What do you love to do? So if you enjoy what you do and you love what you do, wow, the ride is so much more enjoyable, and the money will come because opportunities will come from being happy and enjoying what you do. So I drill it back to that again, because people, even at that level of what career you want to get into, sometimes you just worry about the money or paying the bills. But if you're in something that you love and you have to take a couple steps back, you'll be so much more successful in life and in business. You know, so it's a valid point. A lot of those jobs that got wiped away gave people an opportunity to relook at the pressures and stress. And they're like, let's talk about a lot of Wall Street jobs. I mean, they were making a lot of money, a lot of these people, but they also the stress and the hours that went in with that sometimes wasn't worth it. So a lot of them went off and became consultants or took a different job or just changed industries completely. Said, I'm out of here. Going to a whole different industry. Enjoy my life. So, again, it comes down to what's important to you. You know, do you need to have millions of dollars and live in a lavish house? Is that going to be make you happy? You know, for some people, yes. But, again, to have humble beliefs and humble pass and humble mentor to say, live below your means, have a quality life, know you have money in the bank. This is how you beat the system, because who wants stress? You know, I know people that make a lot of money and spend it all year long. And I've sat with them and said, how do you live that way? How about sell your house and downsize, get a house half as big, and you'll still be okay, trust me. And enjoy your life and not work as hard. Enjoy your family, take vacations. This is what it's about, you know? So, you know, the more people I can help with that, the better. And I've helped a lot of people, believe when I tell you, because I'm very passionate about it. And they're like, you know what? You're right. You're right. So people get lost in the shuffle. And society does that to people. And I'm never one to succumb to, the lavish things and have the biggest house and big cars and big Rolexes. And it's a bunch of crap. You know, if you can afford it, that's great. If you can't afford it, then just, you know what? Work hard and just know you're a good person and believe who you are. And don't worry about what other people around you do. And if there are obnoxious people around you, let them be obnoxious. They're not going to get far in life. You know, so I just wish more people were just, you know, of this mindset. And again, I'm just very fortunate and blessed to have had the grandfather I had, and my parents to some degree in a different way as well, just to teach me about the, you know, here's what it comes down to. I value and respect every dollar. I value and respect every dollar. He trained me like that. I'm not cheap. I would use the word frugal, if anything. I'm wise about how I spend money. I spend sometimes overspend on things if I want to as well, don't get me wrong, but I respect the dollar. Mm-hmm. I do respect the dollar. And I've trained my kids that way. I have three girls, they're younger, and I've also taught them, you know, when they talk about money, I said, you know, your babysitters make whatever, $12 or $15 an hour, or $10 an hour, depending where you are. You know, I mean, you know, what you just spent, it just took an hour for a girl to work to make that if they're babysitting, or a man if it's a man babysitter. You know, so you have to understand and respect the dollar.
It's a tool.
Yeah.
It's a tool.
Yeah.
How did your grandfather, I'm not even, first of all, it is to me the height of respect to learn how to pronounce someone's name correctly. I actually sometimes when I hear the stories of people coming across through Ellis Island and they were changing their names because they couldn't pronounce them, I thought, wow, that is so offensive. That is so disrespectful. Although I suppose on another level, I suppose I can understand it. How did your father, whose name I'm not going to even try to pronounce, get the name Charlie?
My grandfather?
Your Charlie, grandfather. Yeah. I beg your pardon.
Yeah. So, Charlie, yeah. So here's what it is. So now, Haralambos, which is his Greek name.
Haralambos. Right? Haralambos.
Yeah, that's his Greek name. But they it's just like a slang. Charlie's like the slang name for it. So he was just known more as Charlie when he was in America and with all the people around him. So that's kind of it's a translation really from the Greek word. So he just used Charlie. And one of the things with my mother and her sister, when he was raising them, he wanted them to learn English and speak English everywhere, because, you know, back then there was a lot of, you know, people were, you know, the whole minority in a sense, you know, immigrants, you know, they wanted to be where they wanted to fit in. So they wanted to speak Greek, and they didn't want to speak Greek outside the house. So it's kind of all about fitting in. So Charlie was just the name people used for him. But yeah, so when they came through Ellis Island, a lot of it had to do with, too, this is a separate topic, is that, like, my father's father, when he came here, a lot of the people, you know, when you're in little villages, like in Cyprus, small villages, you know, my dad's father's name was, you know, Dimitri, which means Jimmy. So, you know, so when the people came in, they think, oh, well, you know, what's your name? Well, I'm, you know, son of Jimmy, son of Dimitri, Dimitrio, whatever it may be. So that's the name they gave him. You know, my last name's Giorgio. It's not even Dimitrio. You know what I'm saying? So, my last name's Christofides. Excuse me. My last name's really Christofides. My grandfather's real last name is Giorgio. Mm. Not even Pistis. So it's all crazy. When they came through Ellis Island, that's kind of what happened. But, that's the story. But yeah. He was known as Charlie his whole life. And my middle name's Charles.
And I know names are given for a real... I've done some programs where we've talked about names of things, but also names of people. And that 9 times out of 10, the person who's been given the name, whatever it is, that name has a meaning. And especially if there's ethnicity tied into it, there's a meaning in that regard and so on and so forth. And then there are folks who change their names because the name they were given just doesn't feel right to them, so they change it to something else, and that has that significance, that meaning. There's a short period of time where I actually wanted to change my name, but it wasn't a change from a meaning that was totally different. I was going to go from Richard, which I've always liked, and my father, my middle name is my father's first name. So I carry him with me always. He is still alive to this day, but you know, one day he will go, and I'll still carry him with me. And I was going to change it to a Hindu name, Raja, which is prince, named after a tiger in a story in a book that is my metaphysical primer, Raja Begum, princess, which was a really fierce Bengal tiger in the story, but never really stuck. It felt fairly good, but never to the point where I wanted to actually change it. And I've read all the meanings of the word, of my name and so forth. So I'm thinking that names are important, and learning how to pronounce people's names. I just really find that that's important. And I struggle sometimes with people's names. And it I'll go back and listen to an interview going, oh, you idiot. You know, why didn't you practice a little? You should have asked them a couple of times and gone back and fixed that and so forth. And, you know, we all make mistakes. But I want to be respectful, both of you and your grandfather and of other folks on this program, because that's the name you were given. You know, I might as well just say, hey, you. So tell me about your book. Hey, you.
Right. Well, you know what it is? Even when you're meeting somebody, you know, the funny thing is, you know, the sales 101 tell you, when you meet somebody, you ask them the name, then use their name once or twice or even three times in their conversation with them as you're meeting them and saying hello. So it's kind of like, it's a respect thing. You know, I agree.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mark, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program and sharing with us lessons from your grandfather. Lessons from My Grandfather's title, the book, Wisdom for Success in Business and Life. Mark Dimitrio, my guest, and a couple of things. First of all, before we let you go, number one is, should you find yourself in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Thank you. I will do that. If I get in the area, definitely. Take you up on that.
And a reminder of the website, it is grandfatherlessons.com. That is grandfatherlessons.com. We will have a link to that website as well, and we encourage you to pick up a copy of Lessons from My Grandfather. Mark Dimitrio is my guest. And the final part of this is a three-part, three-question finale, if you will, that I ask all of my guests. And again, I thank you so much for giving us so much time here on the program. I know your time is very valuable in that regard. First question to you, who is Mark Dimitrio?
Interesting. When you elaborate on that, who?
However you choose to answer that. I usually don't prompt the guests. It's
okay.
Questions
well,
there,
just,
and
who,
you.
Who am I? Well, I'm a hardworking individual, loving father, good friend, good son, good person in and out, and I want to leave this earth a little better than how I came to it. Make as big of an impact I can on life and on people. And hopefully with this book, I'll be able to do a lot of that. So that's who I am.
All right. And you've sort of answered it, but I am going to ask the question anyway. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Well, through just life in general. I mean, obviously, I'm in a career that helps a lot of people get their dream homes or refinance and take money out or whatever they're doing for that matter. So on the business side, I have a very thankful job because I help a lot of people on a daily basis. But on a bigger stand, I do a lot of public speaking, and I enjoy speaking now about the material in my book, and I will hope to make an impact on these people. And one of the things with this book is I didn't have to write this book. The light bulb went off and said I had to write the book to give people a mentor and to give me as well in this book and be able to help them and guide them. And I believe this book's going to do a lot of that. So it's really a blessing to have my words on paper that I know will impact people, and my speaking on stage as well will help people. So I'm blessed by that.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Well, I think I just talked about it a little bit, but I think my life's purpose, I always felt that as an individual, I've always been great at sales. I've always been able to overcome objections, overcome obstacles. I've always said to myself, I can move mountains because I have ability to do that, whether it's just through work or through my speaking or through my abilities. But I just have this never give up attitude, get around things, but in a good way, figure it out. I have a lot of stories in my life that I share a lot of times when I speak that I've overcome objections and overcome obstacles. And I think at the end of the day, I want to use my talents and skills at a higher level. I want to be able to, like, again, through this book and through speaking, be able to help a lot of people, if not thousands, hundreds of thousands, or even hopefully millions of people, and influence them and guide them in the right manner to lead a successful life and make them happy. And I have a gift of this book now, and where it goes from here, we'll see. You know, that's the faith part and the hope part, and I hope I can impact a lot of people, and that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book.
What a beautiful legacy to pass on, not only to your daughters, but obviously to generations in your family, but also generations across the country and around the world as well. Good information, as well as I'm gonna put it in this context, Mark, a wonderful love story between a grandfather and a grandson. And, you know, it would be wonderful if we all had that wonderful extended family experience that seems to be lost in the West, but maybe it can be revived. We don't want to let these folks go without gleaning what we can from them,
right,
and getting to know them, because through them we get to know ourselves as well.
Right, and that's why hopefully this book will, and that's one of the reasons I wrote it as well, to give them the immigrant story, understand what that's like, the sacrifices, the hardships, yeah, and then all the things that go with it. So that's why I'm blessed to have this book to give this to people now, and hopefully they can get a little inspired by it and understand what the trials and tribulations and have the love story between my grandfather and I and have something for themselves out of it.
Lessons from My Grandfather, Wisdom for Success in Business and in Life. Mark Demetrio, my guest, and Grandfather Lessons is the website.com, grandfatherlessons.com. Once again, thank you, Mark, for joining us here on the program. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to all.